Todd versus Doolin School Corporation. Mr. Westrick. May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is John Westrick. I represent Ms. Peggy Todd, who is the parent and natural guardian of RT. This is the case under the IDEA. We believe that the district court below erred in granting summary judgment for the appellee and instead should have granted summary judgment for us. The important points that I have tried to make and wish to reassert here. The Nine case, the appellees constantly talk about the difference in the facts. But we're just not talking about the facts in the Nine case. We're talking about the law. We're talking about the principle, the notion that the process that's being used here by the process that's used by the district courts when they're reviewing these decisions from the state agency is that it's not an abdication. They're supposed to look at being sure that something is being done. And this is the problem, is that the elephant in the middle of the room, if I may, Your Honor, is that no one is talking about here, is that the child couldn't read. And every time they said the child couldn't read, we got a very corporate report-like document that promised a lot, divulged little, and did nothing. And it went over and over and over again. And that is the problem. There was no reasonable likelihood that this child was going to get a benefit out of the plans that were done. And they kept testing, we'll try this, we'll try this, we'll try this. The one thing that some people said was the thing that should be tried was the one thing that wasn't tried. And then when we've gone through four of the five options, instead of trying number five, we go back to number one. And that's the problem, because the Congress has told us, the Congress made clear in 1997 that we were to look at getting results. Now, I'm not making a...
But are you suggesting that the school should have sent RT to this Foreman school, or was this... Because it's very pricey. Is there anything else they could have done that would have complied with the statute, in your view?
Well, what I'm saying that they should have done, Your Honor, no, I'm not going to say that my client has an automatic chit as a result of the IDEA to pick at a very expensive school in Connecticut. That I think the Supreme Court and this court and every other court said that's not the way this works. It's not an entitlement. What the child's entitled to is an educational plan that is reasonably calculated to success. And what happened here was that as the school district tried its plans, they weren't getting any success, but they just kept kind of retrying them and rehashing them. And they didn't look at what my client and her people were saying is the core problem here. Here's what we want. And I'm not implying, by the way, that my client is saying that she's entitled to a specific program. What she's entitled to is, or her son rather was entitled to, was a program that had a reasonable likelihood of success. And the success wasn't coming. Even if we accept, because of the deferential standard of review, the evidence that the district court relied on, the success wasn't coming. They just kept rehashing the same kind of programs over and over and over again, leaving my client no choice.
How much success was achieved at the Foreman School?
He is reading. He's on a college prep. I believe he's graduating. In about a year and a half, Your Honor, he went from a child who couldn't read to a child who could read to a child who later, through the Foreman School, is on a college preparatory class and who I believe is going to end up graduating from high school and who is able to read. And the problem here is that they knew the child couldn't read and they didn't do anything about it. They kept rehashing the same thing, well, we're going to do this. They talk about, well, he was socially promoted. So what? That high school degree doesn't mean a thing if you can't read it. And that's been our whole analysis, our whole complaint with the process, is the IEPs weren't calculated to confer the benefit. They just didn't do it. And when I talk about the fact, and I want to be clear about this, that he learned to read at the Foreman School. I'm not making a post hoc ergo propter hoc argument that, well, because of this, what they did was wrong. But the results are a part of the equation. And at some point in time, the school district was compelled to realize what they were doing wasn't going to work. But they just kept rehashing over and over and over again.
Well, I'm looking at page 12 of their brief. They say that he got a score of 103 on something called a Woodcock-Johnson passage comprehension test and an average grade on the Gilmore oral reading comprehension test. This was before Foreman. So doesn't that show that he could read?
Well,
even before he went to Foreman.
First of all, I think this is important to note. The child himself, and I was under the impression that the statistics below made it clear that he couldn't read. There were some words he could recognize. He was also exceptionally intelligent. But he couldn't, and what the test demonstrated he couldn't do, was when he was reading along in a sentence, he would have these gap words. If it was a word that he'd seen before and had finally had drummed into him, he could understand. But he couldn't read everyday sentence. He couldn't read the new words. He couldn't do this. And, of course, we have, I don't really want to make passing reference to it. We have the other statistics that say these are wrong. The problem is that I'm in front of an appellate court. I'm not in front of the district court, and I have to recognize my standard of review isn't quite as wide as perhaps I would like it. But the child couldn't read. He testified he couldn't read. The mother testified he couldn't read. The doctor testified he couldn't read. The counselors, even for the school, testified he had severe reading problems. That's not a quote. That's a paraphrase. And what they just kept doing was rehashing the same program over and over again and to no results. And that's when my client, after 8 years of schooling, said, enough is enough. Both sides have briefed this. Unless the court has specific questions, I will come back on the rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Westrick. Mr. Wheeler?
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honor asked the important question, which is the reference at page 12 to our brief was, in fact, an evaluation done by Dr. Hosterman, their expert. Dr. Hosterman found that this child was, in fact, reading. His reading comprehension skills were at the ninth grade level. This was while he was still in the eighth grade. He was a year ahead. For the plaintiffs to contend that somehow this individual could not read in light of their own expert's testing that showed that he was, in fact, engaging in reading comprehension at the ninth grade level is simply foolish. But, of course, that's not the job of this court or, in fact, even the district court. The Board of Special Education Appeals, the administrative level, determines what weight to give to that evidence. The role of this court is much more limited. The role of this court, according to the decision in the Monticello case, is that the court is simply going to review on appeal. Patricia bears the burden, citing the Patricia P. case, on appeal, Patricia bears the burden of proof of the party challenging the outcome of the state administrative hearing. And in the absence of a mistake of law, we may only reverse the court if the findings are erroneous. In this case, the court had specific evidence in front of it. It had contradictory evidence. Mom clearly testified at the administrative hearing. She said, my child can't read. The child said, I can't read. The teachers all testified, yes, he had no problem reading in school. What this child, his problem is, he's a dyslexic. What he does is, if you give him an isolated word, he cannot read that word. He has difficulty with certain words. However, this child is able to read, to comprehend at the ninth grade level when only in the eighth grade, because he can read in context. He is able to, in fact, read. Dr. Hosterman, plaintiff's own expert, testified to this at the administrative hearing.
Are you saying there was no benefit from his going to Foreman?
Sure, Your Honor, but that's not the test.
So I'm just wondering, what kind of benefit did you think he derived? Does the record show he derived?
The record shows, actually, Dr. Hosterman's follow-up. He tested in 98 when the child was in eighth grade at our school. He tested the child again in 1999, 1 year into the Foreman placement. The evidence in the record and cited in detail in our brief indicates that he made the testing changes in the Woodcock-Johnson the court referred to, in the reading comprehension, in those other areas, was within the statistical sampling of the margin of error for the test. He didn't show any significant increases at all. That's in contrast, in fact, to the increases. What the plaintiff has said is this was more of the same. We gave this child the same IEP over and over again, and there was no increase in this child's educational abilities. We began servicing this child in the third grade. If you look between the third and the sixth grade, and this is all detailed in the brief, and I'm not going to go through it in detail unless the court would prefer me to, you will see between 15 and 17 point jumps in this child's performance on the standardized test. This child was improving. He went from a poorly performing student from the third grade into the fourth grade, through the sixth grade, into the seventh grade and the eighth grade. He continued to perform well. This child, as indicated by Dr. Hosterman's testing, by the eighth grade had reading comprehension levels at the ninth grade level. This is not a student that can't read. This is a student that is not learning from or receiving some educational benefit from the program that he's receiving. The cases where a student is not receiving educational benefit, where you're getting more of the same, the Lucas 9 case, for example, that was referred to in Book Reese, you have a student that is receiving more of the same. The student is actually regressing. The standardized testing will show, because as the cadre moves up with standardized testing, a student that's not receiving educational benefit will actually, he won't just stay the same, his standardized test scores will actually fall because he's not keeping up with his cadre. That's the regression. That's also the analysis on the extended school year. We don't see any of that here. What the evidence in the record before the Board of Special Education Appeals, the hearing officer, and the district court, all of the evidence showed that this child moved along with his peer group, received A's and B's, his standardized testing was very good. This is the evidence that the court had. The BSEA, for example, found, based upon this evidence, the proposed IEP was reasonably calculated to enable the student to receive an educational benefit and was appropriate to meet his needs and to provide a safe and the least restrictive environment. The district court went through and reviewed each piece of that evidence. Judge Lozano, in a very detailed decision, concluded, upon consideration of all the evidence, including test scores, grades, the witness's testimony, and rendering due weight to the BSEA's findings, this court concludes that defendants provide an IEP that was tailored to RT's unique needs. The standard review for this court is clearly erroneous. The simple fact is that Judge Lozano's decision and the BSEA's decision was supported by the evidence in the record, and as a consequence of that, under the standard announced by this court in the Patricia Pete case, we believe the district court promptly entered summary judgment on behalf of the school corporation. And unless the court has any further questions, I'll yield back the rest of my time.
Thank
you, Your Honor. Oh, Your Honor, may I
yes,
admit
sure.
it one,
of course.
One thing, if I might. Your Honor asked a question about what kind of services the school offers. I would note that the school in the latter portions of the case conferences going into the 7th and 8th grade year did offer this particular child an individualized placement into a fully inclusive learning disabled classroom. Mom rejected that. That's what Forman is. Forman is not the least restrictive environment. It's a school solely for dyslexic children. We offered him that placement in our school. Mom rejected that. This is in the administrative record at 956. Mom rejected that because she felt that a placement in an LD classroom would be too stigmatizing for this child and that he didn't need it. So for them to now seek that same placement and have us pay for it as a residential seems somewhat of an oxymoron.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Will. Mr. Westrick?
Just briefly,
in the cave of the blind man, the one-eyed man is king. What's stigmatizing in the school district where there are children who are not disabled is not necessarily stigmatizing when he's with children who all have his disability. Unless the court has other questions, my client and I thank you for your time and attention.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. Our next case.